I didn't like him much. No, replied Ping. Just you, me, and Fatso. Okay, said Kai, letting go of the wheel. Kai, go! The driver flicked the reins and the carriage set off. Four imperial guards rode behind them on fine black horses. The emperor had wanted to send a whole section of guards to protect Kai, but Ping had persuaded him to send just four. Ping smiled to herself as they passed under the southern gateway. She was proud of the high regard Liu Che had for her opinion. She looked up at the three characters that were written on the gateway in gold. She could understand them now. They read, Long live the Emperor. Pulled by the galloping horse, the carriage rattled through the tiger forest at a fast pace. Ping had hoped that they might catch a glimpse of tigers, but if they were there, the thunder of the horses' hooves would give them plenty of warning of their approach. The only animals she saw were deer and foxes, and they were far away. Once Kai realized how fast the carriage was traveling and that the side shutters could be left open, he was enthusiastic about the trip. He wanted to stick his head out of the carriage so that he could feel the wind in his ears. He climbed over Ping and the Imperial Magician so that he could look first out of one side of the carriage and then the other. Dongfang Swore wasn't as pleased about the journey as Ping. His smile looked a little forced. Is something wrong? Ping asked. He didn't answer straight away. The Emperor is not entirely happy with the efforts of the Longevity Council, he said. He can't understand my reluctance to risk the lives of his subjects by sending them off into unknown lands and over the ocean. He thinks we should have come up with more schemes to lengthen his life. You're doing your best, Dongfang Swore, Ping replied. It is not enough. Ping felt sorry for the Imperial Magician, but she soon forgot about his concerns. Her excitement was growing. Though she was pleased to have a change of scenery and keen to find where the next dragon keeper would come from, it felt as if dragonflies were flitting around in her stomach. She was going in search of her family. When they passed through the gate in the wall that surrounded the tiger forest and started to travel through fields and villages, Ping pulled the little dragon back inside. He sat on the seat with one ear inside out, making low, sad noises. Ping not nice, he said. It's Lulu's idea. He doesn't want anyone to see you, she told him. Ping was happy to go along with Liu Che's wishes. She could imagine the fuss Kai would cause in every village they passed through. Ping picked up Kai's latest ball. His Saturn ball hadn't lasted long. He had shredded it to pieces. One of his attendants had made him a ball made of wound hemp string. That one had proved to be a nuisance, as servants were forever tripping over lengths of unraveled string. Finally, someone had come up with the idea of a sturdy ball made of goatskin stuffed with nutshells. So far, this one had survived. She threw it to the little dragon, and he caught it expertly in his jaws. Then, with a twist of his head, he threw it back again. There wasn't much room in the carriage, but it kept him occupied for an hour. It had taken a lot of persuasion for Dongfang Swore to allow her to bring the rat along. Hua was happy to sleep among the comfortable rugs and cushions. Ping was glad that he didn't have to spend all his time in a cage. Glad he was with her again. Telling stories was another thing that kept Kai amused. Ping spoke the words aloud. His understanding of spoken words was much better now, and she only had to stop to explain a few unfamiliar words in her head. Ting told him the stories that Lao Ma had told her when they had worked together at Huang Ling Palace. Kai liked the tale of the dragon, who redrew the riverbeds with his tail after Emperor Yu had dried up the great flood. He also liked the story of the naughty princess who was turned into a frog and imprisoned in the moon. He had heard them many times before, but he still enjoyed them. She asked Dongfang Suo if he had any stories to tell. He told a long-winded tale about an imperial guard who lost all his money gambling. "Ping's story's good," Kai said. "Fatso's story's bad." There were times when Ping was glad that she was the only one who could understand the dragon. The village of Lulin, where the Yu family lived, was more than 5 times 100 li away. It sounded like such a long way, Ping couldn't believe they would be able to go there and back in a few weeks. Because they were on imperial business, they were permitted to travel on the middle section of the imperial road that was made from flat stone slabs. It was a swift and smooth journey. After the third day, Ping was beginning to wish she hadn't talked Liu Che into allowing her to bring Kai along. He was bored and restless. Hua did his best to help entertain the little dragon. They played a game called Where is the Rat? That Ping had invented. Hua was very ingenious at finding places to hide in the confined space of the carriage. He hid behind cushions, under the hem of Ping's gown, and on top of the sleeping imperial magician's hat. Whenever they stopped to eat or to stay the night at an inn, Kai had to shape change. He could never quite decide what shape he wanted to take. He would start off as a bowl or a bucket, then he would catch sight of something new and change into that instead. Fortunately, it was usually dark by the time they stopped for the night, and the weary innkeepers didn't notice that Ping arrived with a pot and left with a pumpkin. They spent the seventh night at an inn in the city of Mang. Ping didn't sleep well. The closer they had got to the village of Lulin, the more anxious she had become. The next day, she might be reunited with her family. She tried not to, but she couldn't stop herself imagining what it would be like to meet her parents. As they had traveled, she had managed to keep these thoughts at the back of her mind, but now her stomach was churning like water boiling on a blazing fire. Her feelings about her family swapped and changed. One moment, she understood how desperate they must have been to sell her. The next, she was angry with them for caring so little about her. She wondered if her mother still thought about her. Did she have brothers and sisters? Did they know about the sacrifice she'd made for them? Or had no one told them that she even existed? Lulin was a neglected little village surrounded by mulberry orchards. Dongfang Sua explained to Ping that mulberry trees were grown not only for their sweet fruit, but also for their leaves, which were the only thing that silkworms ate. She nodded, but she already knew. The tree's summer foliage was long gone. The branches were bare and brown and blown by a bitter wind. Ping was glad of the coat Lady An had given her. As they approached Lulin, a pack of skinny dogs surrounded the carriage, barking furiously. The houses were in need of repair. The few pigs were as thin as the dogs, so were the chickens. "I thought that raising silkworms was a profitable business," Ping said. "That is usually the case," said Dongfang Suo, climbing down from the carriage with the help of a guard. "Birdies," said Kai. His long red tongue licked his lips. Leave the chickens alone, Kai. They belong to these poor people. We'll have dinner later. Ping looked at the children working in vegetable fields and tending water buffalo. They all had runny noses and hunger in their eyes. Would that have been her life if she hadn't been sold to Master Lan? You have to shape change now, Kai, she said. Kai thought for a moment. Ping looked away, and when she turned back, there was a chicken sitting alongside her. It was much plumper than the ones that were scratching around in the dirt. She was afraid the hungry inhabitants would try to steal it. No, Kai, she scolded. Nothing that people can eat. The air shimmered, and the chicken turned into a jar. The arrival of an imperial carriage, accompanied by four guards, caused quite a commotion, as it had everywhere they had stopped. The village elder welcomed them, bowing and thanking them for honoring his village with a visit. Children left their chores and came to stare at the visitors. Women came out of their houses to see what all the fuss was about, shielding their eyes from the slanting rays of sunlight. The elder sat them in his courtyard and brought wine for the weary travellers. No doubt they sat outdoors because he was ashamed of his humble home. Ping had told Kai to stay in the wagon, in his jar shape. She hoped Dongfang Suo would be quick. She knew the dragon would soon grow tired of sitting still. The imperial magician shivered, pulled his coat around him, and accepted the wine offered to him. He made polite inquiries about the silk crop. Heaven has not blessed us, the elder said. Our crop has been poor for 3 years in a row. Our trees have been struck by disease. The leaves turn yellow, and brown spots appear on them. The silkworms won't eat them. I am sorry to hear of your misfortune, Dongfang Suo replied. Ping impatiently fiddled with the cuff of her coat while the elder told the imperial magician all the remedies they had tried. It was more than an hour before Dong was able to ask after the Yu family. Yes, they live here, the elder said, as they have done for many generations. Ping could hear nothing but the hammering of her heart. This was the moment she had been waiting for ever since they had left the Garden of the Purple Dragon. The elder led them to a particularly dilapidated house. Before Dongfang Suo had a chance to knock, the door was flung open. A man and a woman stood at the door. They were thin and, judging from their worn clothes, very poor, but both were smiling. Welcome, welcome. They spoke as if they were greeting old friends, but they stood in the doorway so that it was impossible to get into the house. We have waited for this moment for so long. They were taking no notice of Ping. Their smiles were all for Dongfang Suo. She couldn't understand their excitement. Mr. Yu was a small man, who once might have been as fat as Dong. The fat had disappeared, though, and the skin on his face hung like bags that had been full of grain, but were now empty. Mrs. Yu was taller, but had a stooped back which brought her down to her husband's size. Three small children, all girls, hid behind their mother's gown. Ping stared at Mr. and Mrs. Yu, searching for a resemblance. In their eyes, in their smiles, in the way that they moved. From somewhere inside the folds of his gown, Dongfang Suo produced three jujubes. The little girl's eyes lit up, but they wouldn't take the fruit. Will you permit your daughters to accept this small gift? Dongfang Suo asked. Mrs. Yu pushed the little girls forward. They took the fruit, ate them hungrily, and then were sent off to feed the chickens. Dongfang Suo tried to move inside the house.
"My home is too humble for such honored guests," said Mr. Yu, standing, bowing and smiling in the doorway. "A humble home is a palace in the eyes of heaven," said Dongfang Suo, pushing past him. The imperial magician was determined to get out of the wind. Four older girls were working inside the house. They were bent over a large bowl of steaming water. In the dim light, Ping couldn't make out what they were doing. They stood up, bowed, and started to leave.
"Please, don't let us interrupt you," Dongfang Suo said.
The girls glanced at their parents and went back to their work. Ping stared at them. Were these girls her elder sisters? Mrs. Yu didn't say a word. She just smiled and smiled. Ping couldn't understand how such poor people could be so happy. The house was indeed very humble. It consisted of a single room with a floor of trampled earth and no furniture, just one ancient mattress and an unlit stove. The wind found its way through holes in the walls. The grey sky showed through the roof. The blankets looked old and worn. Ping had grown used to the comforts and luxuries of the imperial lodge. Even the shepherd's hut on Tai Shan seemed luxurious compared to the Yu family's house. Mr. Yu invited them to sit on a worn and smelly water buffalo skin on the floor. They were offered more wine. The Yu's wine was rather sour millet wine that hadn't been strained properly.
"You have fine daughters," Dongfang Suo said.
"Yes," said Mr. Yu, dismissing his seven daughters with a wave of his hand. "That is my misfortune."
"They must be a great help to their mother," the imperial magician said politely.
"They are hard-working, I suppose, but unfortunately only one of them is betrothed."
Now that her eyes were used to the dim light, Ping could see what the girls were doing. Each one had a pile of white balls in her lap. Silkworm cocoons. A small charcoal fire beneath the large bowl kept the water hot. In fact, it looked close to boiling. The girls soaked the balls in the hot water and then turned them over and over until they found the end of the silk thread. Then they unraveled the thread and wound it onto reels. Ping watched in amazement. Each silkworm cocoon unraveled in one long, unbroken thread. Each thread must have been more than a li long. The girls' fingers were white and wrinkled from being in the hot water. Ping wondered if the Yus had another daughter, a daughter they had been forced to sell because of the burden of so many girls.
"Heaven has blessed us, though," said Mr. Yu proudly. "We have one son."
A young boy stepped out of the shadows. Ping thought he looked about 2 years younger than her. He was very skinny.
"Here he is,"
said Mr. Yu, indicating the boy as if he were a prize ox or a rare jewel. Actually, he was a most unremarkable boy. Ping thought that if he stood among 2x10 boys of the same age, she wouldn't have been able to pick him out. Except for one thing. His hair was very short. Too short to plait or tie in a knot. It hung about his ears and in a fringe over his forehead. He stood with his head bowed and fiddled with the belt tied around his frayed jacket. Mrs. Yu beamed at the boy and held out her hand for him to take. Her fingers were stiff and bony like birds' claws. They were wrinkled like her daughter's, but in places the skin was peeling off to reveal red raw patches beneath.
no doubt the result of spending years immersed in hot water. Mrs. Yu couldn't keep silent any longer.
"We have guessed the reason for your visit," she said happily. "You have come for Jun."
She smiled proudly at her son, while Mr. Yu poured more wine, spilling some on Dong Fang Suo's gown in his excitement. He poured a cup for the boy and handed it to him. The boy took the cup with his left hand. Mrs. Yu glanced at the Imperial Magician to make sure that he had noticed. It was strange to see parents so pleased to have a left-handed child. Master Lan had told Ping what a curse it was to be left-handed and how she brought him nothing but bad luck because of it. "You are aware that members of your family have held imperial office?" Dong Fang Suo asked. "Yes, of course," Mr. Yu replied. "My grandfather held the position about 30 years ago. He was one of a long line of Yu men who had the job. He died unexpectedly while in office. I was only a small boy, but I remember the imperial minister coming to tell us that he'd had an accident. He tested my father and me to see if we had the right characteristics. Neither of us did. We have lived in poverty ever since." "Jun has the characteristics, though," Mrs. Yu continued. "He uses his left hand, and he can predict things that are going to happen." Dong Fang Suo sat up straight. "He has second sight." Ping studied the boy's face. She had thought she would know if she met a fellow dragon keeper. She had expected her second sight would leave her in no doubt, but she felt no connection to the boy at all.
"Yes," said Mrs. Yu proudly. "He knows when storms are coming, and he can tell whether an unborn baby will be a boy or a girl."
Dong Fang Suo looked at the boy with interest.
"I've never heard of a dragon keeper having second sight before they come into contact with a dragon. Have you, Ping?"
Ping didn't get a chance to answer.
"That's how we knew you were coming to offer him the position of Imperial Dragon Keeper," exclaimed Mr. Yu. "We have not come to offer him a position, I'm afraid," the Imperial Magician said. "The position is already filled."
Mr. and Mrs. Yu's happiness melted like ice in hot water.
"Ping is the Imperial Dragon Keeper," Dong Fang Suo said.
The couple looked at Ping for the first time.
"A girl?" Mr. Yu sneered. "How can the Imperial Dragon Keeper be a girl?"
"Who can explain the ways of heaven?" said Dong Fang Suo.
"But we were depending on it," Mrs. Yu said. "We paid the village elder a lot of money to teach Jun how to read and write. It kept him from his work in the orchard."
"We were looking forward to him earning an imperial salary," Mr. Yu said. "My grandfather earned 6 sacks of grain and 5 rolls of cash every year."
Mr. Yu spoke as if this were a fortune, but it wasn't a large sum. The gold coin in Ping's pocket was worth more than that.
"Can't you reconsider? Surely the Emperor would prefer a male dragon keeper," pleaded Mrs. Yu.
"Just a few years of this salary would save us," Mr. Yu continued. "It wouldn't matter that we have no dowries for our other daughters. It wouldn't matter if the mulberry leaves withered and died."
Ping had been waiting for the right time to ask the question that was burning in her mind. She couldn't wait any longer. Dong Fang Suo opened his mouth to say something else, but Ping spoke first.
"Have you seen this before?" she said,
and she pulled out the bamboo square that was hanging around her neck. Mr. Yu held the character upside down as he stared at it. Ping knew it meant nothing to him. He shook his head.
I have never seen it.
It was no surprise to Ping. The first moment she had seen Mr. and Mrs. Yu, she had known deep down that they weren't her parents. She also had a vague feeling that there was something Mr. and Mrs. Yu weren't telling them. But this sensation was overwhelmed by her sadness. She hadn't found her family.
We would still like Jun to be trained, Dongfang Swore said, with a quick sideways look at Ping. In case the position becomes vacant. You will be compensated for your son's absence.
The Imperial Magician pulled a gold coin from his pouch and gave it to Mr. Yu. The couple brightened. Jun will come with us to Mingyang Lodge. A scream from outside the house interrupted the Imperial Magician. Ping knew that the little dragon would be the cause of all the fuss. Kai had been alone in the carriage for too long. Ping followed the noise. It was coming from a tumble-down shed at the back of the Yu house. As she expected, Kai was there, and he was no longer in the shape of a jar. The three younger Yu girls were staring at the purple dragon. The littlest was screaming at the top of her voice. Kai had knocked some small terracotta jars from a shelf.
Caterpillars,
he said, though the others only heard a sound like a cheerful melody played on a flute.
Kai smelled caterpillars.
It's all right, Ping reassured them. He won't hurt you. She patted the screaming girl on the back, trying to console her. I'm sorry he's broken these jars. She picked up several pieces of pottery. Kai was snuffling through the scattered contents. Hundreds of tiny black balls.
Kai, don't, Ping said.
She picked him up. Some of the tiny balls were stuck to his wet pink nose. I'm afraid he's ruined your poppy seeds, she said, brushing the balls off his nose.
I don't think they are poppy seeds, Ping, said Dongfang Swore. I suspect they are silkworm eggs, save for next season's crop.
Oh, said Ping, trying to gather up the tiny eggs. Each egg would grow into a silkworm that would spin a long length of silk to form its cocoon. They were precious. I'm so sorry. The little girl finally stopped screaming and settled into a sniffly cry. Dongfang Swore gave Mr. Yu another gold coin. Kai was wriggling in Ping's arms. He stuck his talons in Ping's arm. She let go of him with a shout of pain. Jun had just entered. Kai scurried over to him, making high and happy flute sounds. The boy stared at Kai, but wasn't afraid of him. He reached out and touched the little dragon's head. Mr. and Mrs. Yu beamed with pleasure. Ping tried to smile too.
It looks like we have found another dragon keeper candidate, Ping, Dongfang Swore said. Our journey has been successful.
Kai like boy, said the little dragon.
Ping's half-smile shriveled like an autumn leaf. She felt a sensation she had never felt before. It took a while for her to put a name to it. It was jealousy.
Chapter 20. Twisting Snake Ravine. The horse was harnessed to the carriage before dawn. Dongfang Swore had been anxious to return to Mingyang Lodge as soon as possible. There were many things he had to attend to before the festival. He had spent an uncomfortable night, even though the village elder had insisted on giving up his own bed to such an important guest.
Two of the guards had been dispatched the night before with a message for the Emperor telling him of their success. If the Imperial Magician was aware of Ping's low spirits, he showed no sign. Despite the early hour, every inhabitant of Lu Lin was at the village gate, jostling for a good view. Frightened children clung to their parents' gowns or cried to be lifted up. They all wanted to catch a glimpse of the amazing creature that had suddenly materialized in their village. Kai was aware of all the attention on him and growled and blew out clouds of mist. Jun kissed his mother and sisters goodbye and climbed into the carriage. Mr. Yu handed his son a worn silk scroll. "You must continue your studies," he said. "We will pray to heaven that you are successful." He gave Ping an unfriendly glance. "It's your birthright." The boy nodded. He waved to his family as they drove off. He leaned out of the carriage, watching them grow smaller and smaller until the miserable village of Lu Lin disappeared from view. The carriage wasn't built to carry three people and a fidgety dragon. Dong Fang Swore took up more space than Ping and the boy together. Kai soon grew bored. Unless they were traveling through heavily populated areas, Ping had given up trying to stop him from hanging out of the carriage. He clambered over them, treading on the boy's scroll and the Imperial Magician's stomach. The sky was overcast, and Dong Fang Swore predicted snow. "I expect you have many questions," he said to the boy, smiling broadly, "about dragons and their ways." Jun shook his head and tried to hide behind his fringe. "About the Emperor and the Imperial Palace?" the Imperial Magician asked, his smile shrinking. The boy shook his head again and concentrated on his scroll. Every few minutes, he sighed deeply. It seemed he wasn't as pleased as his parents about the change in his fortunes. Ping saw him wipe his eyes with his sleeve. He missed his family, even though they were poor. "He's lucky to have a family to miss," Ping thought bitterly to herself. Half an hour later, the Imperial Magician tried again to engage the boy in conversation, but Jun's head was bowed, and he was silent. Kai was hanging out of the carriage, trying to catch leaves that were falling from trees. Ping held onto his tail, just in case he leaned out too far. As she watched the wet, empty fields roll past the carriage, Ping had plenty of time to think. She knew now that Mr. and Mrs. Yu were not her parents. If she was a true dragon keeper, it could only mean that the Huans were her family. But Minister Ji had said they were all dead. She would never find her family. Kai was trying to get Jun to play with him. He hadn't left his side since the moment he'd first seen him. He had insisted on sleeping at the foot of the boy's bed, even though it was just a pile of straw in the shed. The boy let out a cry of surprise. Ping looked round, thinking Kai might have bitten him. But it was Hua who had caused his alarm. The rat had crawled out from under a cushion. Dong Fang Swore chuckled. "That is Ping's rat," he said. "You don't have any unpleasant pets, do you? No snakes or spiders under your jacket?" Ping stroked Hua. She hadn't realized that the Imperial Magician didn't like him. She looked over at the scroll Jun was studying. It was covered with characters, hundreds of them. Ping recognized only a few. He was obviously a much better reader than she was. Dong Fang Swore was signaling to her, raising one caterpillar eyebrow and jerking his head in Jun's direction. He wanted her to talk to the boy. Ping didn't feel like making polite conversation. She didn't want to put him at his ease. She wished she'd never met him. She had imagined finding an assistant, someone to take her place if she was unwell, someone who would produce a future dragon keeper from among his children. She hadn't expected to find a rival. Dong Feng's war was insistent. He kicked her in the shin. Ping couldn't think of anything to talk about. She looked out of the window for inspiration. They were driving past a village surrounded by fields. Farmers were at their work. She noticed other children, boys and girls with short hair like Jun's. A few were completely bald.
"Is there some reason why you have your hair cut short?" she asked the boy. "Is it a local custom?"
The boy blushed.
Dong Feng Shuo cleared his throat.
I think you'll find, Ping, he said with a nervous giggle, that the children have had their hair shaved off to remove an infestation of head lice. Those with short hair are still waiting for their hair to grow back.
Oh, said Ping. When I was at Huangling, I had lice, but Master Lan made me rub a foul-smelling ointment in my hair.
Dong Feng Shuo glared at Ping. That would be beyond the means of most peasants. Ping had hated the stinging ointment. She hadn't realized it was a luxury. Ping didn't make any other attempts at conversation. She watched the boy's fingers run quickly down the columns of characters on his scroll. She was glad she had forgotten to bring the calf skin on which she had written the few characters that she had learned. Even though she'd had plenty of free time to study, Ping had found learning to read difficult. This boy had learned to read between his chores in the mulberry orchards. Kai was excited that Jun was traveling with them.
"Boy, play ball," he said,
dropping his goatskin ball on Jun's scroll and nudging his arm with his nose. Jun tried to ignore him, but eventually gave in to Kai's persistence. He threw the ball to the dragon, again and again. Kai tossed it back enthusiastically. The boy had much more patience than Ping for playing games, but even he grew tired of it eventually. "That's enough for now, Kai," the Imperial Magician said. "Give Jun a rest." The little dragon's spines drooped. He made low, unhappy sounds.
"Later?"
Jun patted the dragon on the head.
"I'll play with you again later."
Ping stared at the boy.
"Could you understand what Kai said?"
Jun nodded and buried his head in his scroll again. Ping was shocked. She had been caring for Kai for 6 months before she could understand his sounds. Jun had been in his presence for less than a day. Her dislike for the boy was growing.
"The Emperor will be very pleased we found you," Dong Feng Shuo said. "If you pass the tests, you will require some training."
Ping wondered what tests and training he had in mind. She had never undergone any tests, and the only training she'd had was from Dunsa.
"I'll play with you, Kai," Ping said, holding out her hand for the ball.
Kai snatched up the ball and dropped it in Jun's lap.
"No," he said firmly. "Kai play with boy. Later."
Ping's jealousy festered like an unclean cut. The next day, Jun still had his head bent over his scroll.
"What is written on your scroll?" Dong Feng Shuo asked.
He held it up for the Imperial Magician to see. "It's all the characters I've learned," the boy replied, "arranged in small poems and stories to help me remember them." It was the first time he'd said more than 5 words together.
You have done well to learn so many characters.
Our village elder was a government official when he was younger. He taught me to read and write.
Ping has been learning to read, but she doesn't know half so many characters.
Ping stared out through the shutters. She didn't need to be reminded of her ignorance. Towards the end of the second day, Jun finally ventured a question of his own.
Are there other dragons in the world, sir?
He asked Dong Fang Suo.
The Imperial Magician seemed very pleased with this question. There are occasional reports of dragon sightings on the edges of the Empire, far from human settlement, he replied enthusiastically. They could be merely tales told by travellers to impress their listeners, but I think there are other dragons. Somewhere.
Wild dragons?
I believe so, living in the wilderness. I don't know where.
Dong Fang Suo smiled at the boy.
I can see you are already thinking like a dragon keeper.
Ping seethed. They stayed that night at an inn. Ping was glad to have a room to herself. The previous night they had stopped at a military garrison. Dong Fang Suo had been given a room in the officers' quarters, but Ping had had to sleep in the stable with Kai, the horse, and Jun. She was looking forward to a good night's sleep on a comfortable mattress. Very late at night, or perhaps very early in the morning, she was wide awake immediately, as if woken by a loud noise. But the only sound was someone talking in a low voice in the courtyard. She couldn't hear what was being said. Kai had wriggled around so that his tail and his back feet were against her face. She got up to turn him around again. Then she went to the window. Dong Fang Suo was in the courtyard. He was whispering urgently to a messenger who was standing next to a steaming horse. The messenger mounted his horse and rode off. Dong Fang Suo stayed in the courtyard, staring down at his lumpy feet.
Whatever His Imperial Majesty commands, Ping heard him say to himself.
She went back to bed, but she couldn't get back to sleep. There was something odd about the Imperial Magician the next day that Ping couldn't put her finger on. He was unusually quiet and made no mention of the messenger in the night. He didn't try to get Jun to talk again either. Ping didn't mind the silence. She had quite enough conversation with the dragon's endless questions.
Nearly home?
He asked about 10 and 7 times each hour.
Dinner time?
Was his next favorite question.
What's that?
He asked every time he saw something he didn't know the name of. Ping had to explain everything, from piglets to paulownia trees, from winnowing to weaving looms. Eventually Kai tired of asking questions and curled up between Ping and the boy, his nose on Jun's lap, and went to sleep. Dong Fang Suo usually dozed as well, but it seemed he was not sleepy. He stared out of the carriage, absently winding his ribbons of office around his fingers. For the first day since they had left the Garden of the Purple Dragon, the sky was clear. They had left the snow clouds in the south. The air was still cold, but there was no wind. The faint aroma of cinnamon bark filled the carriage as the road left villages behind and wound its way through acacia wood. Ping breathed in the fragrant air. She was startled when Jun suddenly spoke to her.
Have you lived at the Imperial Palace all your life?
He asked shyly, looking at her through his fringe. Ping shook her head.
She didn't want to tell him anything about herself.
Did you always know that you were a dragon keeper?
She wanted the boy to think that she had been trained to be a dragon keeper since birth. Kai woke from his nap.
Story, he said.
The tale of how Ping had become a dragon keeper was one of Kai's favorite stories. He loved to hear about her adventures with his father. She relented. She would tell Kai the story aloud. He still needed to improve his understanding of speech. And Jun would hear it. Then he would know that her life had been harder than his. He would realize that she was the true dragon keeper, the one who had traveled with a wise old dragon, the one who had carried the dragon stone across the empire, the one who had witnessed Kai's birth. She told him about Danza and her years on Huangling Mountain. She explained how Hua had been her only friend. She showed the boy Danza's scale and the purple shard, but wouldn't let him hold them.
You have had a very exciting life, Jun said enviously.
Zhong Fang Swore, who had hardly said anything all morning, suddenly spoke. According to the old spell books, the shell of a dragon egg has many interesting properties, he said, leaning forward and peering at the shard. Ping felt a sudden possessiveness. She took it back from Jun, slipped it into her silk pouch with the dragon scale, and continued her story. She had got to the part where Danza gave her the dragon keeper mirror. Each of Danza's true dragon keepers has carried this mirror, she said proudly. It is hundreds of years old. She polished the mirror and held it out to Jun. You can hold it if you're very careful. She was telling the boy about how she'd defeated Diao and outwitted the necromancer when the carriage stopped. Ping had been so engrossed in telling her story that she hadn't noticed the change in the countryside. They were returning to Mingyang Lodge by a different route. The cassia wood had disappeared, and the road was winding through a narrow valley. Steep cliffs of rock, the color of unpolished iron, rose up on either side. The valley was just wide enough for a single carriage to pass through. Dong Fang Swore put his head out of the window to see what was happening. The Imperial Magician seemed nervous, as if he couldn't bear any delay. Ping didn't see that there was any need to hurry. They had plenty of time to get back to Mingyang before the Emperor's festival. One of the guards came and explained that there was a rock in their path. We are harnessing the horses to it so that it can be hauled out of the way, the guard explained. There will be time for you to get out and stretch your legs. He opened the carriage door.
Where are we? Ping asked.
This is Twisting Snake Ravine, Dong Fang Swore said. The Imperial Magician stood up, changed his mind, and sat down again. Ping peered ahead at the rock that had stopped their progress. It didn't look so big. Kai suddenly said,
Pee!
Can't you wait half an hour until we get out of this ravine? Ping asked.
No,
said the little dragon. Ping knew it was not a good idea to argue with Kai on the subject. The last thing she wanted was the smell of dragon urine in the carriage. The Imperial Magician suddenly grabbed hold of her sleeve. No, don't get out, Ping. He looked like he had more to say, but the words appeared to get stuck in his throat.
Pee now!
Said Kai more urgently, and hopped down from the carriage. Ping shook Dong Fang Swore's hand from her arm. I have to keep an eye on Kai so he doesn't wander off. There was barely room between the rock face and the carriage for her to climb down. Dark rock towered above them on both sides. so smooth and steep, it looked as if it had been cut with a knife. A band of blue was all that could be seen in the sky. Ping had the uncomfortable feeling that she was being watched. Kai sniffed around behind the carriage. It always took the dragon some time to find the right place to pee. He preferred a tree, but there were none. Several tufts of grass had forced their way between rocks. One spindly bush had managed to find a patch of earth to grow in. A few frail, pale flowers were struggling to stay alive. Kai sniffed at one rock after another. "Hurry up, Kai," said Ping impatiently. Ping's stomach ached. She remembered the last time her stomach hurt. She scanned the rock surfaces, but there was no ledge wide enough for anyone to conceal themselves on the cliffs. There wasn't a breath of wind, and the narrow space was eerily silent. Jun jumped down from the carriage. He kicked a stone around. Finally, the little dragon decided that the bush met his requirements. He lifted his leg. A pool of dark green liquid spread over the dry earth. Ping stood at a distance to avoid the smell, thinking that the bush would be dead before nightfall. She waited. It always amazed her just how much urine one little dragon could hold. He finished at last, but then he started sniffing around the rocks. "Kai, come here right now," Ping scolded. She went over to pick him up. As soon as she got near him, he scurried away with the tinkling sound of dragon laughter. "I'm not playing games, Kai," she said urgently. She looked up and down the cliffs again. She saw a flash of light out of the corner of her eye. She turned to the carriage in time to see Jun, with the little dragon under his arm, jump up into the carriage. The boy had her mirror in his hand. Ping was about to run towards the carriage when something high on the opposite cliff caught her eye. It was a snake, black with orange bands. It must have been huge if she could see it from that distance. One of the snake's eyes was looking straight at her. A glint of sunlight reflected in it. Ping couldn't tear her eyes away from it. She tried to move, but couldn't. It was as if her feet had taken root in the earth. She heard the sound of the horse and carriage thundering away, but the snake's eye wouldn't release her gaze. She heard the two guards leap onto their horses and gallop after the carriage. Then she heard a rumbling. At first, she thought it was thunder. No rain was falling, but pebbles were showering on her. Larger rocks cascaded down. One struck her on the side of the head. The snake finally looked away and slithered across the rock high above. A shadow fell on her. She looked up. There was another rock falling. This one was as big as an ox. It was heading straight for her. Her feet agreed to move at last, but the rock was moving faster than she was. The band of blue sky disappeared. Chapter 21. One Grain of Sand. Even though her eyes were open, Ping could see nothing. She hadn't expected to see anything ever again. She had expected to be dead. "Perhaps I'm a ghost," she thought. "Perhaps ghosts can't see." Or had the crashing boulder left her blind? After a while, she realized that the darkness had shades, and in fact, she could just see a sliver of light out of the corner of her left eye. She couldn't move her head to look at it, though. She was aware of various parts of her body, her head, her arms, her chest. They all hurt. The boulder had crashed its way to the bottom of the ravine and come to rest up against the rock face. There was a small triangular space formed by the fallen rock, the cliff, and the ground. It was no more than a few inches deep. Ping's body lay in this narrow cavity. Not crushed, but trapped. Her head was twisted to one side. The rock pressed against her cheek. Blood was running slowly down her neck. The boulder was squashing her chest, so she could only take small, shallow breaths. She couldn't move at all. As soon as she had seen the boulder hurtling towards her, she had known she was powerless to avoid its crushing weight. It was as if the rock had been poised for thousands of years on that hill, waiting for the moment when she stood beneath it, to fall, to crush her. As if a blast of chi power had dislodged it and aimed it straight for her. She should have been able to leap clear, but the snake had distracted her, and then her feet had refused to move. The ravine was as silent as it had been before the rockfall. No birds were singing. There was no wind. Neither were there any anxious voices, no sounds of digging, nor anyone calling her name. There was no voice in her head either. She couldn't feel Kai. She was alone. Completely alone. She tried to think of reasons why she should be alone. Her mind wasn't working well. Perhaps Dung Feng Suo had gone for help. She waited. It was hard to tell how much time passed. No one came. The slender thread that had linked her to Kai had broken. He'd moved too far away. Dung Feng Suo hadn't gone for help. He must have thought she was dead. Left her to rot in Twisting Snake Ravine. But she wasn't dead. Not yet. Her death would be slow. She heard a scratchy, scrabbling sound. Something furry brushed against her face. She smelt a certain ratty smell. "Hua," she said, though the sound came out like a frog's croak. "I should have known you wouldn't leave me." She felt something cool in her mouth. It was moist and sweet. Some sort of flower that contained nectar. Hua had been away looking for something to revive her. There was only one way that she could survive. The rock would have to be moved, and there was only one way that the rock would move. She had to shift it herself. There was no anger in her. Her anger over Jun had been squeezed out of her by the rock. She would have to find some other way to focus her chi power. She would need more than she had ever generated before. She worked through all the mind exercises that Dunsa had taught her. She pictured a garden full of peonies and counted each flower. She counted backwards from 500s. She knew that she couldn't summon enough chi power to lift the entire boulder. She imagined the angle of the rock against the cliff. Less power would be required to tip it sideways. She didn't breathe. She didn't move a muscle. All the chi within her was concentrated on shifting the boulder. It didn't move. Not even a hair's breadth. If Dunsa had been there, she could have done it. She would have been able to draw strength from him. He was far away, though. Far, far away. She thought of her mirror. If she could feel the cool bronze, that might help. But she didn't have the mirror. She had carried it with her ever since she had left Black Dragon Pool. But Jun had it now. If the rock were no bigger than a melon, she still wouldn't have had the strength to move it. I can't do it. Her voice was just a whisper. But she had to. She had to find Kai.